Clear Blue Skies, a Stargate Atlantis fanfiction by Moss Pebbles Sharp. Read by Tasmi. Relationship Rodney John. Rating Teen. Tags include angst, claustrophobia, trapped in elevator, locked room trope, mutual pining, post canon, episode The Shrine, McKellar references, declassification, panic attacks. "McKay," Shepard said curtly as he stepped into the elevator. Rodney's heart sank. He was well and truly trapped now, for the however many floors of their shared transit. Damn it, he'd done such a good job of avoiding the man at the press conference, too. As if elevators didn't make him twitchy enough. "Colonel," he said, matching the other man's cool with an icy blast of his own. "Long time no see," he didn't say, because that would be too many words, and he was all worded out. He had nothing left to say to John Shepard. Looking formal and stiff in his dress blues, the colonel pressed the lobby, just as Rodney had. But the moment the doors closed, Shepard transformed into something liquid, leaning casually against the wall of the elevator, his ankles crossed, his face unreadable but full of something? Rodney refused to acknowledge the coil of heat that spread through him at the look and the stance and the sheer presence of the other man. The elevator started moving with that stomach lurch Rodney loathed. He took steadying breaths and thought about clear blue skies and pretending to himself that his claustrophobia hadn't got exponentially worse since being trapped on the ocean floor in a puddle jumper a few years ago. "Long time no see," Shepard plucked the words out of Rodney's head anyway. The roughness in his voice was probably just him getting hoarse from all those interviews. His face was unfamiliarly smooth-shaven from the last press conference, where he'd been the undoubted star. Everyone wanted to know about the gorgeous, daring colonel who had saved the Earth, a shiny new silver eagle on his shoulder, his bashfulness in the face of their attention and refusal to take credit only charmed them. The whole world was now as smitten with Colonel John Shepard as Rodney had once been. John's face stared out at Rodney from the newsstands wherever he went, and it was a thing he was slowly getting used to. In a way, it helped. A John Shepard on the television, in a magazine, was appropriately remote and didn't lull Rodney with false hope. Anything was better than a John Shepard who was right there, with his kissable lips and inviting body language that were all lies, lies, lies. Rodney didn't even bother dignifying the colonel with a response beyond a slight grunt. "How's Jennifer?" "Okay," the voice was definitely strained. Rodney shrugged. He hadn't seen Jennifer in weeks and knew that she had been one of his biggest mistakes, throwing himself headlong into her and get over the man standing in front of him. She deserved better than that. Better than trying to puzzle just what wasn't clicking, blissfully unaware of the constant litany in Rodney's head. She's not him. The elevator halted a little jerkily, and Rodney breathed a sigh of relief. He would step out of there, and that would be it. Shepard would soon go back to Pegasus, because the world was freaking out about Atlantis staying on Earth. Rodney, for once, was happy to be co-signed to Area 51. It was over. The doors didn't slide open. Rodney tried to control his breathing, reminding himself of how long that moment between the elevator stopping and the doors opening could seem. Clear blue skies, clear blue skies. Shepard hadn't even reacted to the doors not opening, so clearly there was nothing wrong here. Rodney was just being impatient, as usual. A frown drifted over Shepard's face, and he reached for the door release button. Nothing happened. "I'm sure it'll..." he trailed off, taking in Rodney's already sweaty brow and trembling hands. "Fuck." "Hi there," John's calm-sounding voice broke through Rodney's panic. It was only when Rodney started to puzzle just who John was talking to that he realized his eyes were tightly shut. Our elevator appears to be stuck, and I'm with someone who suffers from hypoglycemia and claustrophobia, so I'd appreciate an urgent assist. Ronnie listened as Shepard relayed information about where they were. That really the best you can do? The colonel's disappointed voice said after a few minutes of quiet. Well, okay, I appreciate you making us a priority. He hung up the phone. They know what the problem is and they're getting to us, he said reassuringly. Ronnie didn't miss the evasion, though. How long? He asked, his voice tight. Well, they said it could be an hour or so, the colonel said, looking a lot like he wished he didn't have to convey that information. Was screaming an option? It felt like it should be. Stay cool, McKay. Continuing to think of clear blue skies, Ronnie pulled his laptop out of its bag and placed the bag on the floor. Sliding down the wall, he settled on the soft bag and opened his emails. He still had Wi-Fi. Good. He could just get some work done and forget about where he was. He started replying to an email from that dickhead, Mervyn Peterson, over at MIT, and was soon furiously typing. He could do this. He could lose himself in work just the same way he had always done when he needed to not think about things like loose-limbed, flirty colonels. Oh, for fuck's sake, can you stay still? Half an hour into their entombment, John was pacing the elevator like a panther in the wrong-sized enclosure, and it was very much not helping. John sat huffily on the floor, not seeming to worry about messing up his blues. He gave Rodney a glare, but said nothing, just fished the phone out of his pocket and started scrolling. Ronnie returned to his emails. He had got into his full stride, composing a fifth long paragraph, dressing down Peterson's absurd logic when the battery warning came on. Immediately, Ronnie was pulled out of his virtual world and came back into the tight metal space surrounding him. Oh God, no, Rodney moaned. Instantly, Shepard was at his side, a hand resting on his forearm, searing the flesh where it touched. The familiar scent of John's aftershave hit Rodney's nostrils, accompanied by a stab of longing that did nothing to help him cope with the situation. John was way too much of a rich boy to use aqua velva, but Rodney had always got a rise out of John by pretending that's what it smelled like. In fact, it smelled delicious on him. But that didn't mean Rodney wanted to experience that right now. Rodney, what is it? The man asked, all concern. Rodney slammed the laptop shut. Dead battery, he answered moodily, putting the smartphone out of his pocket. He looked at the charge on it first, this time. 5%. Ronnie switched the damn thing off because there was no way he was going to use the last of his battery and not have it there for emergencies later. Fuck my life, he said bitterly, dropping his face into his hands. Hey, buddy, it's gonna be okay. We'll be out of here before you know it, the colonel said, blissfully unaware of how the word buddy landed in Ronnie's brain. I'm your buddy, am I? Is that what we mean to each other? Buddies, pals. Ronnie gave a hollow laugh and was too wound up at this point to censor his response. I'm not your buddy, Colonel, he snapped, giving the man a fierce look as he said it. The wounded puppy looked back at him, and he felt momentarily bad, but that just stirred up even more anger. No, you don't get to look hurt. Not when you. He trailed off. What? What did I do, McKay? John's tone was accusatory, as if it was Rodney at fault in the fracture of their friendship. You flirted and flirted, and then when I kissed you, I could tell you wanted it, but you shoved me away. It doesn't matter now, Rodney said. Can we just not talk, please? Sure, fine. Shepard's voice was huffy, and he slid to the furthest corner of the elevator and wrapped his arms around his knees, looking miserable. Rodney refused to care. Ronnie hurtled in on himself in his own corner and tried to think about which papers he was going to write first, now that declassification had happened and he could tell the world how brilliant he was. But Instead, his mind just kept snapping back to that night on the pier. Must be over a year ago by now, when a parasite was eating his brain and they both thought he was going to die. John had looked at him like his world was ending, and Rodney, thick-skinned as he was, could see the feelings John had right there. He couldn't not curl his hand around John's and tug the man nearer. John's body had slow crashed into his, no resistance at all, and Rodney wasn't sure whose lip had found whose, only that there was a mutual desperation in the way their mouths collided. And then, all of a sudden, there had been a firm hand in the middle of Rodney's chest. "We can't do this," John had said. "I can't." And then in response to Rodney's loss and misery and confusion, at that an ineffectual, "I'm sorry, buddy, we just can't." No explanation, but Rodney was pretty sure he understood that their happiness had just been sacrificed to John's job. While he was still sick, he had reached to Jennifer for comfort, and when he was well again, he found there was something there were trying to hold on to, given he could never have what he truly wanted. But it was too soon. He didn't give himself enough time to get over John. He still wasn't over John, and being stuck in an elevator with the man was really not helping. Being brokenhearted was unfortunately just about the worst thing for anxiety, and his heaving chest spun out into that feeling of the walls closing in, and oh God, he was going to die right here, because there was definitely less air than there had been before. "Rodney," Shepherd was suddenly at his side again. "Rodney, listen to me. You're having a panic attack. I want you to breathe out long and slow. Don't even think about breathing in. That bit will take care of itself. Just take really long breaths out." Rodney had actually taught John about this technique because it was the only thing that worked for him. Except, of course, if he was panicking, he invariably forgot about it. Incrementally, he managed to slow his breathing down and stop over-breathing and gasping for air. He was sweating and his hands were shaking, and he couldn't have felt more miserable. But the walls were staying where they were, and the elevator was a little bigger than a coffin now. More like a phone booth? "That's it," John said. "That's better." His voice was soothing, comforting, loving. A tentative hand reached and rubbed at Rodney's back, calming his nervous system. Rodney wanted more than anything to collapse against John, tip his forehead into the other man's neck. Tears came up in his eyes and rolled down his cheeks without him having any control over them. "Why? Why does it feel like you love me? Why can't you love me? Or if you do love me, why can't we have this?" But Rodney couldn't say any of those things to John. John had made his choice, and Rodney had to live with it. Having it coldly explained to him was only going to hurt more. "Why what?" John was leaning against him now. His arm had moved to hold tight around Rodney's shoulder, and Rodney felt too weak to push it away, was in fact leaning back into John's warmth. "You confuse me as all," Rodney said. And damn it, even if he couldn't have this, he was going to grab this moment. They were cut off from the rest of the world, and maybe normal rules didn't apply. Maybe you could somehow change all the variables when you were trapped in an elevator. So he tipped his head onto John's shoulder and pressed his forehead into John's neck and felt John's heartbeat increase, his breath catch. "Well, let's just say there's a lot of that going around," John said, his voice unbearably soft and tentative. He shifted just a little, sliding his unfamiliarly smooth cheek across Rodney's forehead. There was a feeling of hesitation, and then Rodney felt soft lips pressed down just below his hairline and linger for a moment. Then John brought his other arm up to complete the circle around him. Part of Rodney was mad, because there had been moments like this, moments when John let something bleed through that gave him hope, but they were always snatched away. The kiss on the pier was the last such moment, but there had been others. And yet, part of Rodney just wanted, and didn't know how to stop himself from going somewhere he would get hurt. He moved his face so that his lips brushed John's jaw, and John made a little sound in his throat that was almost distress. But then his lips sought out Rodney's, and even though Rodney knew he was setting himself up to get hurt again, he met John's lips halfway, and the whole of him just ignited as their lips locked. If anything, it was more intense than the last time, even if the last time Rodney had been dying. Now there was all this more complicated grief, regret, missing each other, desperation, and an undercurrent of fear. Rodney knew he couldn't have this, knew any moment he was going to get hurt, but he couldn't stop himself from climbing inside John's soft, hungry mouth, sliding his hands up into that ridiculous hair, and trying to convince himself if he kept the kiss going long enough, it would hold, glue them together somehow in a way they couldn't come apart. But sure enough, all too soon, John's hand was pressing into the middle of Rodney's chest, pushing him back, and he went from feeling waves and waves of love to sheer fury in seconds. He leapt to his feet, tearing out of John's arms and turning toward the mirrored wall, fists clenched against the glass. "I can't believe I let you do that to me a second time. I'm such an idiot." "I'm sorry, I shouldn't have." John at least sounded miserable. "Good." Rodney couldn't look at him, not even in the mirror. He sank his forehead down against his upraised, clenched fist and closed his eyes. The smooth cold of the mirror grounded him just a fraction. "No, you shouldn't have. Not before, not now, not if you weren't prepared to follow through." "What the fuck, Rodney? I'm not the one who..." Now John sounded angry, as if he had the right. Rodney opened his eyes to surreptitiously observe John in the mirror past his braced forearms. He was at a loss to understand what was going on with the colonel. John leapt to his feet, taking a step toward Rodney, and then, seeming to think better of it, retreated toward the front of the elevator, arms crossed and face guarded. "The one who what? What did I do?" Rodney snapped. John's mercurial face looked more lost than the anger in his voice had suggested. "Your girlfriend. Remember her? Remember how you might get caught up in the moment with me, but it's her you'll run to afterwards." John sounded bitter, hurt. "That's not what happened. You rejected me. I wouldn't have. You made the choice. The job over me, I guess." He raised another glance at John, and John just stood there frozen, looking unreasonably confused. "I don't understand, Rodney. I thought we had a moment on the pier?" He was forcing the words out like a wraith queen was in his head. "But later I figured you were already with her?" "Yeah, nice editing, Colonel. Except it misses the part where you pushed me away when I kissed you." "Are you for real, McKay? Did you forget the part where you were a little too far gone to consent to anything? How the fuck did you not know I was..." John stopped mid-sentence, turned around and faced the doors, dragging his forearm across his face, his shoulders sagging. He sounded angry, but his body language said something else. And Rodney's mental gears were all jamming with this new information. "No, you were what?" Something horrible was clawing at Rodney's gut. Rodney knew he'd been kind of an asshole to Jennifer. But what if Jennifer wasn't the only person he'd hurt here? In pieces. The words practically tore themselves from John, his face still hidden, now leaning against the elevator doors. He stayed there, breathing hard, and fell silent. Rodney was too stunned to speak. Nothing John was saying matched the data he thought he knew by heart. John's shoulders were tensed like they were warding off a heavy blow. But Rodney didn't have that power. John had always been the one holding all the sexual and romantic cards. He was Kirk. Rodney was just... Oh, God. What if everything Rodney thought was wrong? Ronnie needed to get out of here. He needed to think properly, and he couldn't. Not jammed inside a tin can with the man he'd been pining over for forever. The man he'd apparently, if this new data was correct, and Ronnie was still processing that, hurt. Badly, by the look how John was curling in on himself like a wounded animal. He went to the emergency phone. Yes, still stuck in this elevator. Thank you, and it's been over an hour. My fellow captain may have neglected to mention this, but he's Colonel John Shepherd. I wonder if that would make you move any faster. As in Atlantis, Colonel Shepherd, the operator sounded suitably awestruck. Ronnie tried to ignore how hearing the name of his former home felt a little like getting stabbed. Sir, honestly, our engineers are going as fast as they can, but I'll let them know the colonel's in need of a rescue. I'm sure they'll be thrilled about that. Oh, well, so glad. I know I could add entertainment value to this little drama. Well, at least feeling pissy, distracted from the claustrophobia and the deeper, gnawing fear that he had got everything wrong. But once he was off the phone, that fear settled in his gut like something unpleasantly indigestible. He turned it over and over, but couldn't make it all add up. Okay, I know getting you to talk in coherent sentences is wildly optimistic, Ronnie said a long while later, when the silence itself threatened to suffocate him. But help me understand this. How do you figure I'm the asshole here? John didn't move for a while, but eventually he turned and slid back down the wall, pulling his knees up and tipping his forehead onto his hands. I didn't call you an asshole, he said, his voice tired. But one of us must be in this scenario, Ronnie insisted. Until about 10 minutes ago, I was sure it was you. I didn't expect you to live, Rodney. But you were too ill for me to say or do anything. I was too late. The anguish in John's voice was almost unbearable to hear. You never said. I didn't know. It's all a bit blurry, Ronnie admitted, shivering to think about his Swiss cheese brain and the horror of every part of his mind rapidly falling away. But couldn't you have said something after? There was already something going on with the two of you. I saw the video, John said bluntly. Oh, fuck. Guilt began eating away next to the fear. You love her, right? John said, looking up. And oh, the wounded puppy look was back, and Ronnie did not like it. She makes way more sense for you than someone like me. And there was that Shepherd self-sacrificing streak Ronnie knew and loathed. Okay, no, Ronnie's voice was suddenly firm, even though his brain was having a job recalibrating all this. I didn't go with Jennifer because I chose her over you. I went with her to get over you. But I didn't want you to get over me. Well, I didn't know that. Well, you could have fucking asked, John said, sounding miserable. But that doesn't explain why you flirted with me all these years, but never followed through. You never encouraged me to follow through. The only time you ever responded even slightly to me flirting was when you were losing your mind. Imagine how that felt for just a second. Oh. But, Ronnie's mind was whirring. Isn't it obvious? Isn't what obvious? That I would want you. I mean, you're you. John just sat there, a look of profound puzzlement on his face. And Rodney? Well, Rodney was feeling more of a jerk by the second, because A, this man had literally no clue he was the hottest human in two galaxies, and in any case, B, that really wasn't why Rodney loved him. That was just why Ronnie hid behind to hand wave his feelings. I'm sorry, he said. What I mean is, I thought my feelings were too big to hide, and either unrequited or at least destined to not be acted on. John's face remained wary, although something unnameable flickered in his eyes. Ronnie was beginning to entertain a tiny amount of hope that maybe things weren't as hopeless as he thought. But then he remembered something else that appeared to confirm his old hypothesis and fly in the face of this new data. You pushed me away again just now. Why would you do that if your girlfriend, remember? John said sourly. Oh, I didn't say, did I? We broke up. Now John's face was completely unreadable. He just looked at Ronnie for the longest time until Ronnie didn't know what to do with his own eyes. And then John sighed heavily and uncurled himself, rising to his feet with ridiculous grace. He stepped right up into Ronnie's space and grabbed hold of the lapels of his fancy suit the PR folks had given him. If I kiss you now, and then another spanner falls in the works, Ronnie. He looked scared in a way Rodney wasn't used to seeing. I won't wet it. You don't know what you mean to me. Because maybe Ronnie should have actually said something a while ago. I'll follow you anywhere, do anything for you. I don't understand how you didn't already know that. Ronnie brought a hand up to John's cheek, once again thrown by smooth skin from the closeness of his shave. His thumb stroked toward the corner of John's mouth, and John turned his face into the caress. A look of pure, unadulterated need lit his eyes, and Ronnie wondered if his own need was as easy to read. John leaned forward and pressed his lips to Rodney's. His kiss was surprisingly tender and careful, and his hands left their grip on Rodney's suit and slipped over his shoulders into the back of his neck, one hand sliding into his hair and the other caressing down under the neck of his shirt. It was Rodney that turned the heat up, flicking his tongue against John's lips and feeling them part for him. Diving inside as his own hands grabbed possessively for John's bicep and refused to let go. A crash came from above them, a sound of grinding metal and a screech. Startled, they broke apart in time to see the elevator doors pried open and a face appear in the 6-inch gap between the elevator roof and the floor the rescuers stood on. Hold on a moment, guys, and we'll have you out of there, the engineer said. Great timing, John muttered ruefully. Ronnie just smiled at him shyly. I don't know where you were heading before all that, but just so we're clear, I'm not letting you out of my sight, John said when they were finally free of the elevator half an hour later. I was going in search of decent coffee, of course, Ronnie replied. And I still am, only this time I'm taking the stairs. Fortunately, the press had not got wind of their predicament, and the pair managed to slip into the stairwell without being noticed. Once they had signed various scraps of paper for the engineers, including a convenience store receipt for bread, milk, whiskey, and tampons. As soon as the door closed behind them, John reached for Ronnie's hand and gave him a shy, brief kiss. We haven't managed to recruit a new CSO, you know, John said with a smile. Somehow you make life in a galaxy with life-sucking space vampires appealing. I guess that really must be love, Ronnie said, feeling an unfettered grin spread across his face at the thought of being back out there with his team. With John. John looked equally pleased at Ronnie's words. And that was when Ronnie realized just what he'd said. Is for me, John said, squeezing Ronnie's hand and moving in for another long kiss. The end.